20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome in, Packers fans, to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It has been as brutal of a 6 days of football as you could imagine in Packers land. My apologies. I usually have the episode up around 5 in the morning every morning. It's 5:28 in the morning right now as I'm recording this. And I'm still sitting here trying to process everything that happened. And I rewatched the game, 0 out of 10. Don't recommend. Don't do that. It's a bad idea. I've had some time to contemplate and think and review and go through everything. And there's not a ton that I can say or talk to you about that is going to ease any pain or frustrations. It just has a ton of sting. It sucks. And like I said, these last 6 days have been as brutal as it gets. When you get a brutal postseason loss, there's some finality to it. You don't get another one the very next week, right? This has felt like two stab you in the heart postseason type losses in a matter of 6 days. Going back again to 9-point lead in Denver, 3 and out, get the ball back. Everything is going amazing. Go Pack, go Chance in Denver. To Micah Parsons going out for the year, losing that game. Zach Tom is out. Evan Williams is out. You're going through a couple, you know, Josh Wiley, a couple other injuries you're fighting through. Josh Jacobs re-aggravates his injury. You rally. You get to Chicago. Things are mostly going okay. You miss out some opportunities early. Jordan Love goes out. Fantastic. Your starting quarterback's out. Malik Willis comes in and you fight and you battle and you claw and you have a 16-6 lead with 3 minutes left. Really with under 3 minutes left, but 3 minutes left in a really good spot still on defense. They kick a field goal. They don't get it off under the 2 minute warning. So they go beyond the 2 minute warning and now they have to kick an onside kick. And it's just over. It should be just over. And you find a way to win against Chicago, giving you every opportunity to win the division, get the number two seed, get things back on track. And you botch the onside kick recovery. Chicago recovers. They go down and score a touchdown. You get the ball first. Bad snap. Chicago gets the ball. Doug Baldwin redo. If you're not familiar, 2014 NFC Championship game, Doug Baldwin. This was the exact 2014 NFC Championship game. Relived live and in living color on Sunday, December 20th, 2025. A little less than 11 years after the 2014 NFC Championship game. That's a tough one to swallow. It's a very tough one to swallow for two consecutive weeks. A team that's as injured as possible. And the thing is, there's probably a lot of ways where you could lose by 6 points in this game. And it would be a mostly honorable loss. That's not a cope. I'm just saying in general, if any team is missing their starting quarterback, basically their starting running back, their starting tight end, their starting right tackle. And within that, that's their best playmaker, their tight end. They're one of their other best playmakers in Josh Jacobs. Their best offensive lineman in Zach Tom. Their starting quarterback, and was an MVP candidate a week ago in Jordan Love. Your best defensive player in Micah Parsons. Your best defensive tackle in Devontae Wyatt. Xavier McKinney's the best safety, but Evan Williams has arguably been their best safety this year. That's how my grades would have it as well. Your starting offensive lineman in Elton Jenkins, amongst others, right? You're missing, you know, arguably your top 5 or 6 guys on your team and 8 of your top, 12, 15, something like that. That's as brutal as it gets. And yet, like I said, there could have been ways where it's like, man, they fought all game and just didn't have enough, right? That there could have been a multitude of ways where that would have gone down that way. And maybe we are even talking some, you know, way, shape or form about this kind of being like a moral victory. I probably not. You're still disappointed. I don't really believe in moral victories, but you could understand of like, man, they battled all game and it just came up a little bit short or whatever. But you had the win in hand. It was a 99.5% win probability for the Packers at one point late in the fourth quarter per Next Gen Stats. A 99.5% win probability for Green Bay. And they choked it away. And they absolutely choked it away. So there are some positives certainly to take away, but they seem so far irrelevant at this point in time. And I talked about going into the game, the division not technically over. We'll go over some of the scenarios by the end of the show today. But being the number two seed and winning the division would have been a hard enough sort of pathway just with the injuries that they have. Now you're probably fighting for the seven seed. We'll go through that a little bit later as well. And meaning that you'd have three road games and so on. And there's a little bit of Jim Mora to this, right? Of just playoffs. Right now, it's tough to look ahead and look forward and say, you know, it's just on to Baltimore and figuring out in any way, shape, or form a way to try to beat the Baltimore Ravens this week. Packers do open as 3.5-point favorites in that game against Baltimore for whatever that's worth. But obviously, the focus and the disappointments on the here and now and not getting a win when you had it in hand against the Chicago Bears. We'll dive into all of it. Before we get any further, I do want to shout out our brand new Packaday Podcast YouTube members, B. Kurt, Scott Tanner, Anthony Adventure, Colin Miller, Abayomi Mendoza, and Biggie Cheese, and also Jake Kohner for becoming an all-new All-Pro member. Appreciate that a ton. Thank you guys so much for signing up. I know you're probably not in the mood today, but if you'd be so kind as to check out those memberships, and if not, just like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. It's a tough time out there for a Packers content creator right now. But I appreciate you guys being here today, and thank you so much for checking it out. And again, for being as kind to like, subscribe, and comment. Those things help a ton. 22-16 loss at the hands of the Bears. Here's my four big things from this one. Number one, to give it some level of positivity, I loved, and I mean beyond loved, how this team battled for 58 minutes. I was giddy with knowing that Green Bay was getting ready for the onside kick, and I would already had the post-game show fired up, ready to go, and I was so excited to talk about this game because, damn it, they worked so hard to get to that point, to have that, you know, 7-point lead, to basically be able to put it on ice without all of their best players. And they would have earned it. They would have deserved it in a huge way. This would have been a huge game, obviously, for Malik Willis. Romeo Doubs, if he catches the onside kick, is one of the big heroes of that game with how he played the big touchdown catch. We're talking about that as one of Matt LaFleur's crowning moments as a head coach, of beating the Bears in Chicago at the division on the line with none of his best players. And the defense and Jeff Hafley, we're talking about them allowing only 9 points in this game. Everything has a different connotation if you just recover an onside kick. It's remarkable. We are talking about this as one of the coolest games of the season and how this team overcame adversity and all of it. And it would have been one of the more fun episodes to do, one of the more fun things to talk about, one of the more fun victories. And you get into, you know, you get that momentum going into the game against Baltimore next week, and maybe it's a galvanizing moment or whatever. And then just reach in, rip the heart out, twist it, pull it, shove it down your throat, and in the most painful possible fashion that you could imagine. And really just a complete redo again of the 2014 NFC Championship game. We got to relive that all over again. Missed opportunities early. You know, big onside kick recovery, touchdown at the end in overtime. It was to a T. It was absolutely to a T. So, but I love the way that this team battled for 58 minutes. I really, really did. And they deserved at that point to have a really fun victory until they didn't. Number two, red zone failures will almost always come back to haunt you. Green Bay in the red zone in this game. They had a first and 10 at the Bears 16-yard line on the opening drive. They got 0 points. They had a first and goal on the Bears 9-yard line. They got 3 points. First and goal on the Bears 5-yard line. They got 3 points. First and goal on the Bears 4-yard line. They got no points. First and 10 on the Chicago 16-yard line again. They got 3 points. 5 times they had a first and 10 or first and goal inside the Bears 16-yard line. 5 times they got 9 points. If you just get, and I think in the both of the times they got to the 16, I think they got inside the 10-yard line. If they just got to the 10-yard line every time in this game and kicked a field goal, assuming McManus makes, yeah, I know it's windy, but pretty makeable field goals with 7-yard field goals. If he goes 5 for 5 on 27 or better or easier field goals, they get 15 points. And instead they got 9. If they just get 1 touchdown and 1 field goal on those 5 drives, they do better. Hell, if they get 4 field goals instead of 3, they do better. And they probably, any of those other outcomes, you probably win the game. 9 points on 5 times within the 16-yard line with a first down. First and 10, 16, no points. First and goal, 9-yard line, 3 points. First and goal, 5-yard line, 3 points. First and goal, 4-yard line, 0 points. First and 10, 16-yard line, 3 points. That will almost always, always, always come back and haunt you. It's just, it's a near impossibility to make up for that. The other team is going to get point production. They're going to get opportunities, and usually they're going to take advantage of it. In this game, Chicago did, and Green Bay is ruining the opportunities that they had, especially early in the game, to put more points on, put more pressure on, and to get out of Chicago with a win. Every single time I see a team that opens up and puts a lot of yardage out on the board, but has to settle for field goals or has red zone turnovers, it's going to come back and haunt them. And it really came back to haunt Green Bay in a significant way. As Justice Mosqueda pointed out, Green Bay had 384 yards. They did not punt in this game. 384 yards, no punts, and only 16 points. Just a really abysmal red zone effort for Green Bay with all throughout the game. Some really big opportunities there, and they blew it. We'll be right back. Hey friends, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. It's the holiday season, the best time of the year for sports, because right now we have bowl games, marquee basketball matchups, playoff pushes, and it's all happening right now, all at once. And while you and I are out making decisions every single day, like which gifts to buy, what to get for dinner, which game to watch, there's only one place where it feels good to be right, and that's Prize Picks. And I love how simple Prize Picks is to use, and more importantly, how fun it is to play. This football season's been even more fun with Prize Picks, and getting my picks in for each slate of games has been a super fun part of my football experience. Oh, and guess what? Prize Picks has a brand new feature, early payouts. If your lineup gets off to a hot start, you may now have the option to cash out those winnings before the game even finishes. So join the millions of users and sign up for America's number one fantasy sports app. Now this week, I'm going with Jordan Love against Chicago as Green Bay tries to retake the top spot in the NFC North. I'm also going with Nico Collins, Jameson Williams, and Teteroa McMillan. Now it's time for you to get in on the action as well. Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. All right, so quick question for everyone. What's better, giving the perfect gift, getting the perfect gift, or making that perfect holiday meal for everyone when you're hosting a big holiday dinner? I go back and forth, but my true answer is giving the perfect gift. Well, the best part is that with Omaha Steaks, you can give the perfect gift, you can add it to the top of your wish list this holiday season, and you can order up some delicious Omaha Steaks to cook your family and friends for your big holiday dinner. It's a win-win all the way around. Now, I love how convenient it is to order Omaha Steaks and how much people love receiving them as gifts. I recently gave some steaks as a gift to a family member, and they were beyond overjoyed. It was a pretty cool moment. also cooked up some Omaha steaks, and that was a pretty cool moment as well because they were absolutely delicious. And right now, it's the perfect time to save on delicious gifts and holiday hosting favorites. Surprise your friends or family members with the gift of grass-fed, grain-finished beef from a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com using promo code PACKADAY. My third thing, turnovers will lose you games. You might look at the box score and say, oh, they only had one turnover. That's not that bad. Turnover on downs on the first drive. It's a turnover. Josh Jacobs with the fumble. It's a huge turnover. Onside kick recovery, that's a turnover. Turnover on downs and a fumbled snap on the final drive, that's another turnover. Four turnovers. That'll kill you. That will absolutely kill you. And it costs Green Bay significantly in this one. And then last but not least, my fourth takeaway, my fourth big one, my fourth, you know, big thing in this game. One really god-awful play can erase 58 minutes of really sound, hard-fought football. Just catch the onside kick. This has been a systemic problem for the Green Bay Packers, their special teams issues, for decades. And they've had ample opportunity from the 2014 NFC Championship game to the 49ers playoff game with Matt LaFleur's time, to learn from their mistakes, to course correct, to put more time, effort, and energy into special teams. And yet here we are, and this team suffers another catastrophic loss in large part due to an absolutely abysmal special teams play. You're at a 92% chance in the modern NFL to recover an onside kick. And it's even, 92% chance. Game on the line, division on the line. All you have to do is recover an onside kick. And you can't do it. And I've seen people, some really smart people, people I respect, people like Aaron Nagler and others, who have said Rich Bisaccia can't catch the ball. It's, you know, Romeo Doubs has to execute that. All right, well, a couple things. Number one, it was extremely poorly executed up front. Bill Melton completely misses his block. Xavier McKinney gets run through. Javon Bullard had a good block. Kudos to Javon Bullard up front. And the entire operation looked woefully underprepared. Keyshawn Nixon's the only one that's coming up to kind of back up Romeo Doubs on the play. Everyone else is just kind of jogging over. Josh Jacobs, who's in on that play, by the way, was in on the kick, the onside kick. He's just kind of jogging over. You need to have urgency in that play. And I don't feel great about Xavier McKinney and Bo Melton being basically my lead blockers up front on that play. And I mean, Romeo Doubs did not look comfortable. Now, Romeo did say that they've repped that play throughout practice. So to that extent, I will say, you know, clearly that's something that they've practiced. They haven't practiced it well enough. Even just batting the ball out of bounds, by the way, in that situation, the entire operation looked woefully underprepared. So yes, if Romeo just catches it, we're probably not talking about Bisaccia on that play. By the way, there was almost a blocked kick too that Green Bay clearly held on. And they thankfully got away with it. Didn't get blocked. Still almost got blocked even with the holding. Didn't get the holding call either. But this has been 3 years of abysmal special teams in the Rich Bisaccia era. Error is actually probably a better way to put it. I have no accident forgiveness for Rich Bisaccia in this one. Kudos to him last year in Chicago for having his special teams unit come up with a blocked kick. Is that probably the, you know, crowning moment of the Rich Bisaccia era? Maybe, probably. But to me, they looked woefully underprepared for that play with, again, McKinney getting run through, Melton completely missing a block, and Doubs looking like it was his first time ever trying to recover an onside kick. and not having the wherewithal to just bat it out of bounds if you're not going to catch it or do anything besides exactly what he did. And also, if you're lining up that way, because you have to have kind of like two hands guys, it very much looked like the primary side was going to be Dobbs' side. I would prefer that to be Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed was on the opposite side. I'd prefer that to be Jaden Reed on that side, to be honest. Or the other one too would probably be Matthew Golden. Matthew Golden's got the best hands on the team. Why is Matthew Golden not in that scenario? So the two guys I would probably want in the recovery situation are Matthew Golden and Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed was on the wrong side. I mean, again, it could have gone that way. You don't know which way it's going to go when you line up. But the strong side, the primary side, was where Dobbs was. And even then, I'd rather have it be Golden than Dobbs. Now, even not just with the benefit of hindsight, but in general, the guy with the best hands on the team is probably the guy I want out there. So it didn't look like the operation was practiced enough. A lot of things went wrong with it. I will say, after first glance, I thought it was just a really... I do think Cairo Santos got a really good kick and they got a really good bounce on it. And it was a little bit of an awkward bounce for Romeo. Still hits him and he's got to come up with that catch. It sucks because Romeo had a really, really nice day up until that point. But that one play will ruin everything. It's not a guarantee that Green Bay wins the game if they recover there. Chicago, I believe, still has two timeouts, but under 2 minutes. Worst case scenario, you run 40 seconds off that clock. They're under a minute. You punt it down to them deep on their side of the field. You feel pretty good about that opportunity. Instead, the Bears get it there. And by the way, all three phases had the opportunity to respond to adversity at the end of the game or just complete their job, meaning you're up by 7, special teams first, recover the kick, and you win the game. And they don't recover the kick. Defense second, get the stop, and you win the game. They don't get the stop. And then offense gets the ball first in overtime. Now, they can't win it there because even if they go down and score a touchdown, if Chicago scores a touchdown, you know, they can tie it up or whatever, but you have the ability to put that pressure on Chicago, go down and at least score points and give your defense a better chance. And instead they didn't. And then the defense had another chance to get off the field and could not, and immediately gave up the touchdown. So they played extremely uncomplimentary football at the end of the game. But at the end of the day, again, if Dobbs just recovers the onside kick, we're not talking about Keyshawn Nixon giving up the touchdown in the fourth quarter. We're not talking about Keyshawn Nixon giving up the touchdown in overtime. We're not talking about Malik Willis and Sean Ryan having a fumbled exchange. But instead, all of those things happened because you didn't do your job on special teams. By the way, right where that's happening, if you look on the sidelines, Rich Bisaccia is looking right there at the play. It's like comically, I don't even know what to say, but Rich Bisaccia is right there watching the whole thing if you go back and watch that play. So the four key takeaways: love the way that this team battled for 58 minutes. Red zone failures will almost certainly come back and haunt you. They did in this game. Turnovers will ultimately always, or not always, but almost always lose you games. They did in this one. And one really awful play can wipe out 58 minutes of really impressive football. Maybe impressive strong. They had some missed opportunities still, but good enough to win with a lot of backups. Let's see. Last 3 minutes of this game, you had the face mask on Brinson on a 3rd and 20, which if you don't get the face mask, it probably wins the game. Miscommunication on 4th down. I'm pretty certain that's Keyshawn Nixon's mistake, by the way. So you might say, well, it's obviously Keyshawn Nixon's mistake. He's there. You have basically like a stacked receiver. All right. And Hobbs is on the inside and Nixon's on the outside. They're in man coverage. The inside wide receiver, which would be Hobbs's guy, goes and runs the post, ultimately catches the touchdown. The outside wide receiver, which is where Nixon is lined up, goes across the middle of the field. You're playing in off coverage. You're in man. In that situation, you switch. I don't know Green Bay's rules. I don't know what they were, you know, communicating on that play. But in general, you play off, you've got a stacked receiver situation, and they cross. You don't try to run with, you switch. Hobbs did the right thing. Nixon did not. And here's the thing. They get a free rusher in Brenton Cox to the quarterback. He has to bail and throw it up. Now, you don't know what's going to happen going into the play, but Carl Brooks dives into the zone to cover the middle guy anyway. If both players would have done the opposite, meaning if both players go at the post, the slant player isn't open anyway. By the time, if you would have thrown it there, Carl Brooks is right there to knock it down in a quick zone that he jumped in. Instead, both players go with the slant route, and the corner route's wide open. If they would have done the opposite, you shut it down. But the two things I'll say here is, regardless of the rule or things like that, these are two veteran corners, and all of that's fixed if you just communicate before the play effectively. If like, hey, we're switching, you just double check. And the fact that that did not happen between two veteran corners is insane. You got a free rusher. You got everything that you wanted on that play. And by the way, when you bring a free rusher, which they did the play before, they brought heavy pressure. They did it, I think, three times in like those final three or four plays. The most common call in that situation is a corner to the corner of the end zone. It's the most common call in that type of situation. And so you should almost know exactly what's coming in that spot. And Jeff Hafley had a beautiful, gorgeous play call on where they get the free rusher on Caleb Williams, and he's just got to throw one up. And if Keyshawn Nixon goes with the guy he's supposed to go with, it's game over. Packers win. Speaking of brutal, brutal, brutal play from Keyshawn Nixon there. And again, Hobbs and Nixon have to communicate that. Blame who you will, but that just can't happen. Absolutely can't happen. You might say, well, that's got to be the coach. Those are two veteran players that have to communicate. Play call is as good as it gets. Free rusher. It's like a 1 second to throw for Caleb Williams, and he's just got to throw one up. It's a beautiful throw by Caleb. Kudos to him for that. Maybe I said this already, but going back to the incompetency of special teams, if you have competent special teams, the Packers are probably 12-2, number one seed in the NFL and controlling their destiny. They don't have competent special teams. They haven't in forever. And maybe this will be the time that they actually learn from it and invest in it more. And I know they've invested in Rich Bisaccia and his assistants. And, you've had some specialists on the team and things like that. It's not good enough. It's just still not good enough. And there's no two ways around it. And it's not been good enough for decades. Until they fix it, you're going to continue to have issues like this that'll come and haunt you at the most inopportune of times. Happened again today. All right, what else do we want to talk about? Let's get to our Habish-Habish-Rotier injury report. Jordan Love, obviously the key one here. I do want to correct myself after the live post-game show. I gave Austin Booker a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because I thought it was a kind of a bang-bang play, literally and figuratively. And I did think Jordan kind of lowered his head a little bit. Upon further review, yes, Jordan's head goes down a little bit. Booker's leading with his helmet. He's leading with his helmet. So, we can debate dirty or not dirty, but it's certainly a personal foul, and it's not a clean play. And you maybe could give a little bit more accident forgiveness if, they didn't have three personal fouls on Green Bay quarterbacks in the course of the first half. But all eyes will be on Jordan Love. Concussion, of course. And concussions are, they're scary, and they're a mystery box for what you're going to get. Some players are back in a couple days and practicing and pretty much good to go. And others, and it's not the player, it's the, severity of the concussion and the hit and things like that. It's not just the player, but other players, like Josh Wiley, concussion last week, was not able to go this week. Didn't practice throughout the week. Well, hopefully he can get back next week. They're going to need him with John Fitzpatrick, the other injured Packer, to talk about as well. But all eyes will be on Jordan Love and trying to get him back. And by the way, Malik Willis, it didn't look like a insignificant shoulder injury either. He fought through it at a beautiful throw to Jayden Reed in OT, but that'll be worth monitoring as well. John Fitzpatrick looks like he tore his Achilles, and he's going to be done for the year. They're going to have to get reinforcements at tight end. Christian Welch. He was questionable to return. I didn't see if he ever returned to the game, but he was questionable to return. That'll be one to keep an eye on special teams. We talked about Malik Willis, and then Josh Jacobs. He did play on the onside kick recovery, so he was still out there. Clearly not himself. And I think you could actually make an argument that he had a couple good runs early, but especially with the fumble, may have hurt the team more than he helped them in this one, unfortunately. So they got to figure out a way to get him right, because right now you can tell he's just not himself. And again, he battled through it. I appreciate that from Josh, and he's a consummate professional, a leader. I love the way he battles. I love that he wanted to go out there, but you could tell just was not quite himself in this game. But again, all eyes are going to be on Jordan Love and whether or not he can come back this week, play against Baltimore, and play effectively. That brings me to our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. There's no perfect answer here. You could say Emmanuel Wilson, who had a really nice day running the ball, but he had that botched catch in the red zone that really cost them. That was a costly play. Malik Willis is my answer, but you could say, hey, when push came to shove at the end, he fumbled the snap, which he did take responsibility for, which ultimately, left them without points and gave Chicago the ball back with the opportunity to win at the end. Romeo Dobbs was the big player on offense throughout the course of the day, but then has the onside kick failure, of course, so he can't be it. And it was just, there's no perfect answer, but I ultimately went with Malik Willis. 9 of 11, 121 yards and a touchdown, 10 carries, 44 yards. Did have the fumble, but I thought just another really impressive performance from Malik Willis to put them in an opportunity to win the game. And again, the fumble play shouldn't have even happened. Should have been done before that if you just recover the onside kick. So I thought he was really impressive. Did everything he could to will the team to the victory, but just give them the puncher's chance and every opportunity to win. And it's unfortunate that they couldn't come away with it, but an impressive backup performance again from Malik Willis, who has been basically nails every single time he's been given the opportunity to come up in a backup situation. Some quick notes on offense and defense. Emmanuel Wilson on offense, I mentioned it, did have that one drop, which resulted in a negative play, but 14 rushes, 82 yards and 5.9 yards per carry. I thought he ran really hard and really well in this game. And in fact, you could make the argument that maybe Matt should have given him the ball a few more times because he was running really effectively throughout the course of the game. So good to see that from Emmanuel Wilson. Romeo Dobbs, of course, nobody's going to remember or care about anything but the onside kick recovery, understandably so, or non-recovery. But 5 catches, 84 yards, and a touchdown offensively, he had a pretty damn good day. And then Jordan Morgan got the start at right tackle. He got steamrolled by Montez Sweat for a sack at the end of regulation. But outside of that, it seemed like he had a pretty solid day. I'll withdraw any sort of major judgment until I have the opportunity to watch the All-22. But interesting that he got the start. And I thought outside of that play, first glance, it looked like he had a pretty solid day. But I'll keep you posted as we go through grades and film review throughout the course of this week. And we'll talk about it with Mike Wall, I'm sure, on Monday as well. Defensively, I want to shout out Jordan Riley. I thought he had a really nice game. He had some plays where he stacked and shedded multiple offensive linemen throughout the course of the day. He had a couple really like teaching tape type plays. So that was really fun to see. Reset the line of scrimmage on a play. He was in on, I think, like 3 tackles at or behind the line of scrimmage. He had a really impressive day. And looks like Green Bay found themselves a really nice rotational defensive tackle kind of out of nowhere. Thank you, New York Giants, for that. But nice day from Jordan Riley, at least at first glance. I thought Jeff Hafley, again, for the first 58 minutes, was absolutely on one. Heck, even the touchdown that they gave up at the end, he had a beautiful play call on that. So, like, even the play at the end of the game to where Keyshawn gets beat by DJ Moore, Quay Walker gets a pretty quick pressure in there as well. So I thought Hafley was pretty phenomenal in this one, but unfortunately, it just doesn't end up being enough in the end. Keyshawn Nixon, we talked about the earlier play, a brutal play where he goes with the wrong guy. I'm 99% sure, 90, maybe I'll say 90 to 95% sure that's on Keyshawn. The other thing I'll say is, the play at the end is tough. It's DJ Moore running full speed, you're one-on-one, and it is a near perfect throw. Now, Keyshawn also pass interfered on the play. You didn't get called for it. That's a pretty blatant pass interference too, and still caught the ball. Keyshawn against Denver gave up a passer rating of 158.3 when targeted, 135.4 against Chicago. Was the hero just 2 weeks ago against Chicago. Things can turn very fast on you. These last 2 weeks have been pretty, pretty rough for Keyshawn. And I would think that there has to be a conversation there for Green Bay. I doubt there will be. I think Keyshawn and Carrington will be your starters next week, but I think all questions are fair at that spot for the time being. Last thing on defense, no interceptions, no fumble recoveries. Xavier McKinney had another chance at one, couldn't come down with it, but this team has just been allergic to forcing turnovers all year, and that makes it really, really difficult. Now, they did get the turnover on down, but even that, the turnover on downs on the first drive is just a bad snap. It's not like the defense did anything in particular on that one. So, some really good stuff on defense, but they've got to start generating turnovers. Have to find a way. And right now, they just, again, they've been basically allergic to it. Then, of course, special teams we talked about. Kudos to Brandon McManus, you know, making some good kicks throughout the course of the game. Did have one kickoff going to the end zone again, though. So that sucks. But outside of that, I thought the special, really outside of the onside kick recovery, I thought for the most part, the special teams did pretty well. But, you know, when you have the most catastrophic play of the game, it's still going to fall on you. And that's what happened in this one for special teams. We'll be right back. Your inactives for the day were Bohanna, Stackhouse, Zach Tom, Evan Williams, and Josh Wiley. So they did have two healthy inactives. They made no roster moves, which was surprising. Part of it is due to a lot of the guys actually being able to go out and play. But they went with only two tight ends, which went down to one when Fitzpatrick went out, which makes it difficult. But yeah, those were your inactives for the game. Talked about the playoffs a little bit, but just to kind of get you up to speed, the magic number between the Packers and Lions is two. So what does that mean? The Packers have two games left. The Lions have three games left, though. So there's five games total. Green Bay just needs two, either Packers wins or Lions losses. That's it. That's your easiest pathway to the playoffs. So they hold their destiny in their hands. If they win their final two games, they're in. If they lose one, they need Detroit to lose one. If they lose two, they need Detroit to win to lose two. So the magic number is between those five games is two. Packers beating the Ravens, Packers beating the Vikings, Steelers beating the Lions, Vikings beating the Lions, Bears beating the Lions. They need two of those things to happen. That's your easiest pathway to the playoffs. So magic number of two. They also can still win the division. They need to win out. The Bears need to lose out. You might say, oh, that doesn't sound. All four of those things are favored to happen. Packers will be favored, at least now, against the Ravens. We'll see what happens with Jordan Love, but as of now, they're favored against the Ravens. The Packers will clearly be favorites against Minnesota in Week 18. San Francisco opens as favorites against Chicago next week, and I would assume that Detroit would open as favorites against Chicago the following week. So if things go chalk in those four games, Green Bay wins the division. But they have to hit a four-game parlay, basically, in order to win the division now. It's not the most impossible thing in the world, but Green Bay's just got to take it, you know, take care of business on their end first and then let the chips fall where they may. And again, if they win two games, they're at least in the playoffs for sure. We know that much. They do, again, still control their own destiny. Some misinformation and tweets out there that are not accurate. If they get two wins, they're in. And, you know, even any two of those results between the Packers and Lions, and they have a chance to get in. Or not a chance, they will get in. Packers are an 82% chance to make the playoffs for the New York Times playoff predictor. That would go to 96% if the Lions lose to the Steelers on Sunday. So you know what to do, Aaron Rodgers. Take care of business in that game. You're basically cheering for the Packers and against the Lions and the Bears. Those are your big ones moving forward. We'll talk about one other one in just a moment. Their odds to get each seed and what's going to happen from here on out. Again, this is for the New York Times. To get the one seed, less than 1%. The two seed is a 6% chance. The three seed is a 4% chance. The four seed is less than 1%. The five seed is less than 1%. The six seed is a 13% chance. And the seven seed is a 59% chance. Miss the playoffs is a 18% chance. So just to kind of recap the more obvious ones, their best possibility or probability is a 59% chance to get the seven seed, 18% chance then to miss the playoffs, 13% chance to get the six seed, 6% chance to get the two seed, and a 4% chance to get the three seed. What you're cheering for this weekend, Steelers over Lions. The Lions are currently 7-point favorites, so you're cheering for the Steelers big time. No Nick Herbig, no TJ Watt. That's going to really help the Lions and hurt the Steelers in that one, but definitely cheering for the Steelers on that 3 p.m. game on Sunday. You're also cheering for the Ravens over the Patriots in the Sunday night game. Why would you cheer for that? Well, if the Lions win and beat the Steelers, which is bad, but if that happens, and the Ravens beat the Patriots, the Ravens have nothing to play for in week 17 against Green Bay. It is a exhibition game for them. The game doesn't matter. It's completely nothing. So they have basically, you know, the ability to play backups, rest guys, do what they do to get ready for that week 18 game. That could be the case. So the first thing you're cheering for is for the Steelers to beat the Lions, because that would help you a ton. Again, you go to a 96% chance to make the playoffs if that happens. But if the Lions do beat the Steelers, then you really want the Ravens to beat the Patriots, because then the Ravens have nothing to play for. And Green Bay then plays a Ravens team that's probably playing that, you know, maybe resting some guys, not having anything to play for. And then a Vikings team that doesn't have anything to play for. And if you get those two wins, you're in the playoffs and maybe win the division, depending on what happens to Chicago. The other thing that you want to cheer for on Monday is a 49ers loss to the Colts. There are possibilities, all right? If they lose to the Colts, the 49ers are 5.5-point favorites in that game, but they have the Bears and the Seahawks after that. Those are losable games for the 49ers. That could get you to a possibility where Detroit wins out and Chicago takes care of business, but San Francisco loses out and Green Bay just wins one game and gets in the playoffs ahead of the 49ers. It's not super likely. It's not insanely likely or anything like that. But if that were to be the case, Green Bay would be 10-6-1. And San Francisco, if losing out, would be 10-7. And then San Francisco would be out of the playoffs. And Detroit, Green Bay, and Chicago would all be in. So it opens up another pathway for Green Bay to get in. So just to recap it, we're cheering for the Steelers over the Lions, the Ravens over the Patriots, if the Lions beat the Steelers, and then the 49ers to lose to the Colts. That's what you're cheering for the rest of this week. The biggest thing is if Green Bay wins their two games, they're in the playoffs, and then they, you know, just take care of business on your own and then see where the cards lie after that. But at least Green Bay has some options and they still have, you know, destiny in their own hands, if you will. It's been a god-awful 6 days. It's as bad as it gets. It's not that they lost. It's how they lost. Win in hand, choked it away. Nate Hobbs said after the game that this is going to be their last loss of the year. Now, as Aaron Ellis points out, he probably needs to clarify a little bit. Their last loss of the year could mean that they beat Baltimore and then the year turns to 2026 and then they could lose the rest of their games or whatever. And technically this game would have been their last loss of the year. I'm assuming he meant last loss of the season. I tweeted it out. If that ends up being the case, if Green Bay goes undefeated from here on out, I'll get Nate Hobbs's quote tattooed on me somewhere. Here's the thing. 6-game win streak wins you the Super Bowl. Anything else probably doesn't. There's a chance you could go 1-1 in the next two games and then still make the playoffs and then go 4-0. But your biggest thing is to take care of business in these next two. So go on a 6-game win streak, win the Super Bowl. Don't go on a 6-game win streak and you're probably ending up with a disappointing season. That's where we're at. Good way to start it next week, hopefully against Baltimore. We'll see again, this team can respond to adversity and maybe find a way not to choke that game away at the end. Really tough loss, battled really hard, had every opportunity to win, couldn't close the deal. And that one's going to haunt for a while. That's one you don't forget. It's one you don't forget. It sucks. But we move on. We get to Baltimore. Green Bay, like I said, still has everything in their own hands. 6-game win streak wins them a Super Bowl. Let's go win a Super Bowl. Let's try to beat Baltimore first. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle-Sinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhardt, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, and Jay Kohner. I'll see you guys tomorrow. try to, you know, wish this one away or forget about it as quickly as you can. Enjoy the holidays, and hopefully Green Bay bounces back next week. I'll see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.